This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Neil Conan is out today. Most of what we know about street racing comes from movies like The Fast and the Furious, tricked-out rides and loads of adrenaline-pumping speed. But a deadly crash in Maryland this weekend that killed 8 street racing fans and wounded several others highlights the dangers of this illegal pastime. Today we take a deeper look at this underground race circuit and what's being done to regulate it. If you have any experience with street racing, either as a driver or a spectator, tell us your story. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255, and our email address is talk@npr.org. You can also comment on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later in the hour, the fine art of eavesdropping. We'll talk with Lee Garchick, who collects overheard snippets of conversation for her San Francisco Chronicle column. But first, street racing. And we begin with Sheila Howard. She's a paramedic and was the first on the scene of the crash in Maryland. She's a former member of the crash rescue team at the Maryland International Speedway, and she's also a longtime street racing spectator, and she joins us here in Studio 3A. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hi.
I wanted to ask you, I understand that when you first got word that there was a crash over the weekend, that you knew exactly where to go. Is that right?
Absolutely. It's nothing to drive by on a Monday morning, the average commuter coming from Charles County, to look down as you pass that site and see, oh, there was a good race this weekend. There's lots of fresh rubber down.
Wow. So it was a known racing spot.
Absolutely.
Explain when you say, you know, there was rubber down. What do you mean? What would have been going on there that night?
Well, at that particular location is where they call the starting line. And the drivers, most of the drivers for that location, they have very very well-built race cars. And for those types of cars, you need big tires. And with the big tires, they're considered slicks. So they are slick. There's no traction. They're sticky because the rubber is very soft. And to make those tires go at, you know, very well down the track, they're going to do a burnout. And a burnout is where you push the gas and the brake at the same time and make the back wheel spin.
And that presumably is why there was so much smoke, because we've heard that there was a lot of smoke and that apparently obscured the sight lines.
Yes, that does cause a lot of smoke, but they can't do that with without putting a substance down on the pavement. At the track, they use water, but out on the street, they use certain household chemicals that do just as well, if not better, as some of the additives that some of the tracks use.
Now, as a paramedic, I'm sure you've seen lots of terrible sights in your time, but I wonder if you ever expected to see anything of the magnitude that you saw there that night when you arrived.
No, I have seen bad. I've seen some really bad, but I've never, ever seen anything like this. And had we actually known, we would have been a little bit more prepared. We weren't prepared for 12 patients when we were alerted by a driver I actually don't know who stopped by, but somebody stopped by where we were at the gas station and said two people were just hit during a drag race. Well, we left and headed on the way expecting two people and got there and there were 12.
Yeah. As a spectator, as a fan of this sport, Had you ever imagined this kind of a thing could happen?
No. When I was working at MIR.
MIR is?
Is Maryland International Raceway. Mm-hmm. Yep, they're in St. Mary's County in Buds Creek. When I was working there, we never, ever had anything of this magnitude. If we ever had a call, it was maybe one car rolled over, and the qualifications for a car to come and race, they have to have certain safety equipment. So we know that the driver is always safe when they land. It's very unusual that they're not, but we've never dealt with spectators.
Yeah. Well, what is the appeal of this? What's the appeal of watching it? What draws people to a site like this to stand there in the middle of the night? I mean, it was 3 o'clock in the morning or something to watch these races.
It's the thrill. It's the adrenaline. I can say I'm a victim of that same disease. I really am. That's why I like it. It's just like, for me, going down the road, lights and sirens in the ambulance. It's the thrill of going fast, of being the better person, And for the street racers, it's instant gratification. They know that they're going to either win or lose right then and there. When they start talking their talk with other drivers and other people, then they can't say, okay, well, you know what? You just meet me at the racetrack this Saturday at 2 o'clock. Because in between that time, they could do a lot of things to their car and make changes, and then they've already made their bet. But now they can just go right out on the street and say, okay, somebody flag us down and we're gonna go.
It's, I thought you were a spectator, but it sounds like you've actually, participated in some of these races as well.
I've done two or three, maybe four. But I was the trick. The person that I was with used me to lower the other driver's expectations. They would say, you know what? Okay, that's fine. I'll let her drive, and then you give her a car and a kick, and I'll explain that. But you give her a car and a kick, and I'm gonna let her drive, and then we'll go. And the driver, of course, says, oh yeah, she's a girl, go ahead.
Yeah. Now, what are relations, or how do the police deal with this? It's an underground. It's illegal, isn't it?
It is. It's illegal. And I don't know how the police deal with it because we never got caught.
But it sounds like the people who lived near where this terrible accident occurred had been calling up and complaining about it for years, but it sounds like nobody was really paying attention after a certain point. In other words, I'm wondering, is it condoned by, not condoned, but does law enforcement just sort of let it happen?
I don't know the answer to that. I really don't. I wish I did know the answer, but that may not be a question that ever gets answered because I don't think maybe the police want that answered.
Okay, we're going to bring in another guest now, and his name is Kenneth Peake. He's a professor in the Criminal Justice Department at the University of Nevada. He co-authored a Department of Justice report on street racing, and he joins us from the studios of KUNR at the University of Nevada in Reno. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yes, thank you.
Wonder if you can give us a quick history of street racing. Where did this all begin?
Well, there's a very long history, Lynn. I don't think it's too difficult to imagine competitive speed events. As soon as the wheel was invented, certainly the Roman chariots and whatnot, we're familiar with that. But of course, in more modern times, we had the movies, A Rebel Without a Cause in 1955, and then American Graffiti and Grease and so forth in the 70s. But of course, nothing did more to boost the current popularity of street racing than the surprise hit that came out in 2001 entitled The Fast and the Furious. And I think it's had a couple of sequels by now. But that movie made $80 million in its first 10 days. And that speaks to the popularity of competitive racing. And now we have, of course, a younger demographic as opposed to the older set like myself. And I used to like to light them up on the drag strip myself, the legal drag strip. But now we have the younger demographic that is, of course, this is an international problem. It's simply become an international problem, not only here, but in Canada, in France, in England, in Australia. People are dying all over the place. In fact, one of the famed Mounties in Canada was killed not too many months ago by an illegal street racer there. So, unfortunately, something like Maryland occurs, and it's brought to the forefront.
Yeah, and I live in D.C., obviously, and not too far from where this occurred. And when I saw it on the front page of the paper, like I think many people, I was surprised because I really knew nothing about this. And I wonder, are there some places in the country where it's more prevalent than others, or?
Yes, certainly. California, I think it's fair to say, would be the more or less the place where it was germinated and really got going actively. However, obviously, we see that it's not limited to the Western United States. I happened to read a few days ago where a Florida state trooper was quoted just recently saying that this is a problem that's been, quote, out of control unquote, there for about 4 years. So it certainly is a national problem that the police are having to grapple with.
Now, you mentioned that there's drag car racing that's sort of legitimate and then there's the street car racing. There's two different kinds we're talking about here, right?
Yes, and of course, and as our paramedic is saying, I forget her name. Is
Sheila.
It Alicia?
Sheila.
Sheila, yes. We're, of course, here talking about the underground sort that's it's very not often, I think it's fair to say, spontaneous. It's very well planned, and it is, again, underground. And there are a variety of things, not just line them up side by side and take off down an eighth or a quarter of a mile. There are many different alternative kinds of races that can take place that are just as dangerous as what we saw in Maryland last weekend.
I'm wondering, Sheila, if you think that the kind of accident, the terrible crash that we saw over the weekend, do you think it'll deter people from street racing?
I don't think it will. I think it'll just make them move to another place. I think that with all the complaints that have happened on this highway and now this, I think that they may go away for a while and they may find some other place. And there are other places. But there, I think there has to be a long-term project from Prince George's County to stop this. And it's not going to be today or next month. I think it's going to have to be a step-by-step, year-by-year process.
Would it deter you from street racing again?
Oh, I don't. I haven't done it in a very long time.
Oh, you haven't done it in a long
time.
But you're still interested in racing?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But the safe way.
The safe way.
The safe way.
Yeah. And we're going to talk a little bit more, Kenneth Peake, with you. There are efforts underway to regulate this, are there not?
Yes. I'd like to speak, first of all, to some of the peripheral problems.
All right, we're going to pick up with that when we return from a very short break. I just wanted to set up that we will be discussing some of the ways it might be regulated, and as you said, some of the problems involved. Kenneth Peake, so stay with us. And Sheila Howard, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Lynn Neary. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Type street racing into the YouTube search engine and you'll see a raft of videos posted, racers boasting of their accomplishments. Street racing is illegal, and one look at one of those videos will tell you how dangerous it is. This weekend, 8 people were killed in Maryland. 6 were spectators. We're talking about street racing this hour. My guest is Kenneth Peake. He's a professor in the Criminal Justice Department at the University of Nevada and the co-author of a report on street racing for the Department of Justice. We want to hear your stories about street racing. Give us a call at 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And, of course, you can check out our blog at npr.org/blog of the nation. Kenneth Peake, what you were saying just before the break, you wanted to talk a little bit about some of the problems associated with this. Why don't you do that?
Sure.
Now?
All right. Well, of course, it takes a lot of money to underwrite this activity, Lynn, and certainly what we're talking about here are people who have no reservations about putting $10,000 under the hood of their automobile for nitrous oxide systems and souped up engines. We're talking about cars that can punch out 350 horsepower and go up to 160 miles per hour. These are those little foreign cars, the Hondas and Acuras you see driving around, that are capable of doing this. So to support those activities, very often they auto thefts will be involved. In other words, a lot of peripheral problems. Well, certainly stealing parts off of automobiles, other automobiles, fencing of auto parts. You're going to have gang-related activity involved from time to time. Certainly DUI, noise complaints, disorderly conduct, intoxication, trespassing. So there's a whole raft of things that can come into play here that the police are going to have to deal with.
Yeah, so it's an underground activity. It's illegal, and a number of illegal activities associated with it as well.
Yes.
We're going to take a call now. We're going to go to Craig, and Craig is calling from, I believe it's Michigan. Hello, Craig.
Yes, Plainwell, Michigan.
Plainwell, Michigan. Good to have you.
Thank you. I went to high school during the mid-70s, and we used to drag race hot rods on the street. But my friends and I have gone to racing motorcycles, illegally street racing motorcycles. And for the biggest reason is because you're not driving a 2,000-pound missile that if something goes wrong, you're going to wipe out 12 people like happened in Maryland. Pretty much, if you make a mistake, something goes wrong, and you're riding, and a lot of these motorcycles will do well in excess of 200 miles an hour. If something goes wrong, it's only your own life that you're taking into your hands and nobody else's. And we did have a tragedy here in Michigan, just south of Allegan, the town near Plainmoor, last year, where three bikes crashed, one was killed, another was critically injured, and the last one walked away. But for a lot of my friends and myself, we simply switched over to using the motorcycles to do the night racing, the street racing, instead of cars, because it does lessen the danger for other drivers on the road or for other pedestrians who might be there watching the racing.
It seems like motorcycles would be more dangerous to me somehow, but you're saying dangerous to the riders, not so much to the...
Yeah, they're more dangerous for the rider, but they're less dangerous for any spectators that might be around. You know, you're talking a bike that weighs 400 pounds, has 160 horsepower, and it'll do 240 miles an hour.
All right, thanks so much for your call, Craig.
Thank you.
We have an email now from a listener saying, you keep talking about the street racing accident as if we all know what happened. Did a car run into a bunch of people? Was it out of control? What happened? Well, it's still being investigated exactly what happened. But in Maryland, really suburban Maryland, but on a road that's not much used, but which apparently was a popular road for this activity of street car races, there was a terrible accident. A large number of spectators apparently had gathered in the middle of the road to watch one of these races. There was a lot of smoke that had gotten, because of the tires, I guess, created a lot of smoke. And so the visibility was very bad, and a car came along and indeed crashed into a group of people. And eight people were killed and a number of people were injured. And this happened, again, in suburban Maryland, not too far from Washington, D.C. So for those of you who had not heard about that story, we just wanted to repeat those details. And again, there's still an investigation going on about that. We're going to bring in a new guest now. Joining us is Brian Harrison, and he's a former street racer, and he's president of Evo Street Racers. He joins us from our bureau in Culver City, California. Thanks for being with us, Brian.
Likewise.
I wonder if you can explain the difference between drag racing and street racing.
Well, drag racing is a sport. It's a sanctioned sport that has rules and regulations for not only the competition, but also the vehicles itself. Whereas street racing has no rules and no regulations, nor do they have any safety devices around the race to protect the participants and or spectators.
Yeah. So you now are a drag racer, is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. But I understand you did used to be a street racer, and you would even race in construction sites, is that right?
Unfortunately so. With regards to street racing, when your ego is on the line and a race is on the line, you add some money to that and your friends are watching and things of that nature, you'll do anything to win the race. You can take a cold-hearted, logical person, but you put them behind a wheel and they're apt to do very, very false driving techniques.
What is the culture of street racing? We were just talking to Kenneth Peake. He's still with us, but he was saying there's a lot of illegal activity at times around street racing. Maybe you could give us a larger sense of what the culture is.
Well, I would certainly caution anybody that indicates that there's a lot of legal activities going around, because often your typical street racer is not somebody that deals drugs. It's not somebody that intends on hurting somebody or steals and things of that nature. They're out there with their friends having fun. They're taking part in a car culture that has long been part of American society. However, there are times of which there is theft at the scenes, and there are some crimes committed, but I wouldn't say that's directly related to street racing as much as it is just as a part of American culture with crime.
All right. Let's take a call now. We're going to go to Giuseppe, I think it is, in Normand, Oklahoma. Hello, Giuseppe?
Hello.
Hi. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's Giuseppe. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Okay, my personal experience is as a victim. In Dallas, Texas, 4 years ago, in plain day, more or less 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I happened to be on a traffic stop on a red light, waiting for my green light, and suddenly one car passes on my right and speeds through the intersection, and another car hits me completely from the back at full speed. And I was spun into the intersection. I guess I spun 3 or 4 times. My car was completely wrecked, totally wrecked. I barely made it out of the car. Approached the driver of the other car that was yelling in Spanish over a cell phone, and I happened to be very fluent in Spanish. And his comment was, de carrera, la carrera seguida, so the race is gone. And I asked him in Spanish, what are you talking about? And he said, well, I lost the carrera, I lost the race.
Okay. So that's how you knew that that you were the victim of, you were in the middle of some kind of streetcar race.
Exactly, exactly.
And were you badly injured or?
No, my head was slightly hit from the roof of the car that collapsed, but I didn't go to a hospital. And the police came, and they didn't do very much to the other guy. He showed a Mexican driver's license, and when I called him by name, the name that was on the license, he never spoke to me.
Do you know if this person was ever charged with any criminal activity?
As far as I know, by the time I left the accident, they gave him a $50 or a $75 ticket.
Interesting.
And quite a few bystanders were there, and everybody told me, oh, yeah, it's illegal racing going on here between 2 or 3 cars.
Hmm.
And I was left with nothing except the pain, the humiliation, a totally destroyed car.
Yeah. Giuseppe, thanks so much for calling in. This is a very good example that we can now talk about with our guests. I thank you very much for calling in. You know, here's a good example, Kenneth Peake and Brian both, of somebody who got caught in the middle of one of these things, and it happened in the middle of the day. Did they happen in the middle of the day very often, Kenneth Peake?
Well, I think it's fair to say that's pretty unusual. Most of them are late night, and they go to a gathering place and then arrange where to go, usually to some remote spot. And I would say this is certainly out of the ordinary. Brian may have a different take on that.
Brian, do they happen in the middle of the day often, Brian?
Well, I would agree with the professor that most of your racers do occur at nighttime. However, should one driver pull up against another driver and are enticed for whatever reason that might be, they will race without making any plans, predetermined plans. So street racing, you don't necessarily have to go ahead and plan for it. You can simply be driving, pull up next to somebody, and for whatever reason, begin a race.
So that says to me that it's not an easy thing to regulate. If we're talking about trying to find a way to regulate this, the activity is already illegal. How do you, and if it can just be as easy as pulling up next to another car and saying, let's race, I mean, how do you regulate that?
Well, that's the problem for the police, of course, and there is a continuum of things that can be undertaken. I would say that, again, this is very organized, though, typically. There are activities called the cannonball run or the hat race where they'll go hide a hat full of money and then call the racers and tell them where it is, and the first one to race there can get it. They'll form convoys and do this kind of a convoy to get around places as fast as they can. There's also something out of California called ghost riding the whip, where people do stunts. They get out of their cars and dance on the roof or on the hoods and up to. In fact, people have been killed doing that. There were some people killed in Modesto, California, about a year ago. So it takes a lot of different forms. And again, it's not normally a spontaneous thing like the gentleman from Norman was talking about, I don't think.
Brian, have you ever known anyone that was killed as a result of one of these races?
Unfortunately, so one of my very, very dear friends, Phoenix, Arizona, did pass away. He was a passenger at the time. And the race got out of hand. It was too high speed, and they crashed. The unfortunate thing with regards to street racing is often the vehicles used are not designed for high speeds. Kids will modify them to a certain degree, but with regards to the speeds that they're reaching, not only is the vehicle not capable of handling it, but they, as drivers, are too inexperienced to be able to handle the driving speeds that they're at, and you combine them both together and you get disastrous results, which happened to my friend.
And did that change your attitude towards this at all?
Oh, it'll certainly change my perspective, because you take a step back and you reconsider, why are you doing this? In the end, what are you winning? And, you know, although vehicles might be equipped with safety devices and things of that nature, is the caravan with the mother inside it, does she have these items to protect her? Does her child in that car, do they have a, you know, a 5-point harness with a roll bar cage around it? Chances are no.
We are talking about street racing, some of the problems associated with, some of the efforts to try and regulate it. If you'd like to join us, you can call us at 800-989-8255. And you are listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And we're going to take a call now. We're going to go to Jerry, and she's calling from Chico, California. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. I just told the person that I talked to that I'm 75, and I street raced when I was a kid back east, and it was just simply a matter of you started at one point, you had two cars, and they said, okay, this is going to be the finish line, and the two cars lined up, and away we went, and whoever reached that finish line first was the winner. And I'm surprised to hear him say that, to hear the professor say that so many people are investing lots of money. Now, I will admit, I did modify my car. I had my head plane down, and I had double exhaust pipes on it, but it was not to the extent that he was talking about. And one of the other things that I think is interesting to me is the reason we street raced was because there was no place else to race. Sometimes we'd unlock a gate that belonged to a racetrack, and we'd go down there, and if we were able to pick the lock and race around the track. But if we'd have had a place to do it legally, I'm sure we would have done it legally rather than on the street.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Jerry. And that brings me to something I wanted to bring up with Brian Harrison, because I think you are president of Evo Street Racers, and that is an association that is trying to curtail illegal street racing by assisting sort of in the evolution of street racers into motorsports racers. You're providing them with exactly what Jerry was talking about. Is that right?
That is correct.
How do you do that?
Well, what we do is we implement a 4-stage program. The first stage of that program is to speak with the street racers and things of that nature to get an idea of what they're looking for. Then we'll take that program and we'll go to the local track, who usually does not accommodate for street racing because they are a racetrack and they have race programs, but they don't usually understand the mentality of a street racer. So we'll go ahead and we'll work with the local track to try to assist them in designing a program that benefits them monetarily and also keeps the kids off the street. From that point, what we'll go ahead and do is we'll speak to the local community in an effort to bring the community in, because as the professor stated, the police cannot be everywhere at all times. However, the community is. So should you have, you know, one member on the street looking out for street racing, you can easily identify that versus having to have a cop there. So we'll work with our community to bring attention and educate them to the problems. And once we have the program, we have the community, we have the police on the same page, then, you know, we can lobby for effective laws and legislation to be passed that makes the laws more strict.
All right. We're going to see if we can get one more call in here. Teddy's calling from Michigan. Go ahead, Teddy.
Hi there. Yeah, my name is Teddy. I'm calling from Michigan, and I took a little bit of offense to what one of your guests said about street racers being leading a lot to crime and drug dealing and whatever, because, you know, I used to do it a lot, very much, and I have a little tricked-out, souped-up car, but now you say this thing, and now everyone's going to get the stereotype of people with a car with some rims on it and an exhaust thinking that they're smoking weed and breaking into people's cars and stuff, which is really not true. And my second point is that street racing goes, like the 75-year-old caller just said, street racing goes back for, you know, since they build cars, and it's going to happen, and no matter how it's regulated, which it should be regulated, it's going to continue to happen. And there's a lot of programs for street racers out there who are listening to get involved with legally, as your Evo guy there can talk more about. And I'm just calling in because I used to street race a lot, and, you know, I didn't have a car that cost like $10,000 under the hood. I had a little Honda Civic. I have still.
All right, Teddy, We're going to have to say goodbye. We're going to have to say goodbye to you, and we're going to have to say goodbye to our guests because we're running out of time. But thanks for that comment. And I think Teddy's call and a couple of others say to us that there's still a great deal of interest out there in street racing. Kenneth Peake, I thank you so much for joining us today. Kenneth Peake is professor in the Criminal Justice Department at the University of Nevada. And Brian Harrison is a former streetcar racer and president of Evo Street Racers. Coming up, sometimes the conversations of strangers are more interesting than your own. It's the fine art of eavesdropping. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.